Blog Talk Radio.
Era notte a Târziu.
It was very late at night.
Stăteam pe o piatră afară.
I was sitting outside on a rock.
Lui Stan i-am arătat piatra că nu a fost la mine.
As Stan said, I showed him the rock when he came to my home.
Acolo stăm și mă gândeam ce am făcut eu.
And I was just thinking, what did I do?
Plângeam să nu mă vadă familia.
I was crying so my family wouldn't see me.
Deodată am văzut că vine o lumină spre mine.
And all of a sudden I saw a light coming towards me.
Când am văzut lumina, am crezut că e o mașină.
When I saw the light, I thought it was a car.
În Italia și în România m-au urmărit cu mașina să mă omoare.
Because in Romania and in Italy they always try to run me over with cars.
După mine și aici.
So I thought they found me here too.
Dar n-a fost mașină.
But it was not a car.
Că lumina m-a cucerit.
The light surrounded me.
Și din lumina m-a auzit aceeași voce.
And out of the light I heard the same voice.
Era același înger.
It was the same angel.
Dumitru, de ce ești tu disperat?
Dumitru, why are you so despaired?
De ce m-ai pedepsit așa de tare?
Why did you punish me so harshly?
Ce am făcut eu?
What did I do?
Ce nu m-ai lăsat pe mine în pușcărie?
Why couldn't you let me stay in prison?
Familia avea unde să stea.
But my family would have had a home.
Zic, eu n-am unde să plec.
I don't have a bed to lay my head down on.
De ce m-ai adus aici?
Why was I brought here?
Dumitru, te-am adus aici că țara asta va.
Dumitru, I brought you to this country because this country will burn.
Și m-ai adus să mă ard aici și nu m-ai lăsat să mor în pușcărie în țara mea.
So why did you bring me here to burn? Why didn't you let me die in jail in my own country?
Dumitru, taci.
He said, Dumitru, be quiet.
Urcă-te lângă mine.
Get beside me.
Ce aparat a avut nu?
I don't know what the device was.
M-a tras lângă el.
But he pulled me beside him.
Mi-a arătat toată California.
And he showed me all of California.
Ce ți arăt?
Do you see what I've shown you?
Sodoma și Gomorra.
This is a Sodom and Gomorrah.
Păcatul lor a ajuns înaintea lui Dumnezeu.
Their sins have reached God.
Și Dumnezeu a hotărât să-i pedepsească pe
foc. And God has decided to punish them by fire.
M-a dus și mi-a arătat Las Vegas.
He came and showed me Las Vegas.
Aici e Sodoma și Gomorra.
This is a Sodom and Gomorrah.
Într-o zi va.
And one day it will burn.
Mi-a arătat New York.
He came and showed me New York.
Aici e New York.
This is New York.
Aici e Sodoma și Gomorra.
This is a Sodom and Gomorrah.
Într-o zi va arde.
In one day it will burn.
M-a dus și mi-a arătat Florida.
And then he showed me Florida.
Aici e Florida.
This is Florida.
Aici e Sodoma și Gomorra.
This is a Sodom and Gomorrah.
Într-o zi va arde.
And in one day it will burn.
Da, cu mine ce ai să faci?
What will you do with me,
I said? Been listening to the Wake Up America message with Dimitru Dudeman. For a copy of this very important message, please go to our website at handofhelp.com. Never before in the history of our country has our nation been in more jeopardy than now. Please order a copy of the video Wake Up America at the handofhelp.com website and get the warning out while we still have time. This is the Light of Truth radio broadcast with Michael Boldea.
All right, welcome to the program. Thank you for joining us. This is the Light of Truth radio broadcast. I am your host, Michael Boldea, and I hope you had a Merry Christmas. For those of you that do not participate in the celebration thereof, I hope your day was just as bright and eventful and full of peace and family. And why not maybe a little gingerbread cookie washed down with a nice glass of cold milk? The Boldea family was changing diapers and, you know, trying to keep the baby from crying. So that's what we did for Christmas. Victoria had a little cold, and so we were trying to keep her away from the baby because it's rough going if babies get sick the first few weeks. And she spiked a fever a couple of days before Christmas. So not the baby, Victoria, the toddler. She's still a toddler. Wow. All's well that ends well, as the saying goes. Baby didn't get sick. Victoria's over it. She's still got a runny nose, but everyone's in good spirits. I baked cookies with my daughter on Christmas Day, chocolate chip Toll House, if anyone is interested. And no, I didn't celebrate bearded men in red suits, and I didn't pretend somebody came down the chimney. But we did sit down and talk about the birth of Jesus and how he was born in a manger and how from the first he was rejected and how from meager beginnings where no one could have predicted what impact he would have on the world because he was the Son of God, because the hand of the Father was upon him from before he breathed his first. The Son of God became the single most impactful individual in the history of the world. Your beginning does not dictate your end. Began in a manger, surrounded by animals who breathed on him to keep him warm. He was hunted much of his early years. And those who hunted him desired his death. And yet, we know what happened. We know that the Christ grew to become a man. And that man not only performed miracles, but eventually that man laid his life down so that all who believe in him might attain everlasting life. So that's what my family and I did for Christmas. And yes, I've gotten the emails, and yes, I've gotten the letters and the prolonged explanations as to why it's wrong to even say the name Christmas. But in case you've missed it, in case you've been checked out for so long that you don't know what's happening, there is a war on against the household of faith. There is a war on against believers. There is a war on against Christ. I will not be party to aiding the enemies of the cross by not mentioning the word Christmas. I will not be party in aiding the enemies of the cross by keeping silent and pretending as though we're not hated, and pretending as though if the laws were to change in this nation, many people, more people than you would like to believe, wouldn't bat an eye watching you get dragged out of your home, placed in a truck, taken to a camp, and re-educated, for lack of a better term. I was reading this just before we came on. I was just clicking through the news. And apparently the Oregon court upheld the $135,000 ruling against the Christian bakers who refused to bake a cake for a homosexual wedding. Again, I keep trying to get this point across because some are still missing it. Even with everything that's transpired in the last, 11 months, they're still missing it. All right, the deck has been stacked against people of faith in this nation. The courts have been stacked with the godless and the heathen. And it would have taken one more push to bring us to that place where the idea of living out your faith, the idea of calling sin, sin, would have been criminalized. Why do you think these people are still raging? Just utter madness gripping them at the thought of Donald Trump being president. Because the brass ring was within reach for them. The brass ring was right there. It was right before their eyes. One big push, one more step across the finish line. And all the perverts and pederasts and hedonists would have had free rein to do with Christians what they would. Because the law, my dear friends, would have been on their side. It's the law. Have you heard that nonsense? It's the law. Not so much. Because the law does not subvert the Constitution, and the Constitution of these United States says that you have the freedom of speech to say what you know you must in order to defend that which must be defended. So, again, the Oregon Court of Appeals And this just happened recently. I think it was today, actually. Upheld a ruling against two bakery owners who refused to bake a wedding cake for a lesbian wedding in 2013 because it would go against their Christian beliefs. So it wasn't because they hated these two women. It wasn't because they smelled like patchouli. It wasn't because of anything other than their Christian beliefs. And because of their Christian beliefs, this couple took these bakers to court, and they won a $135,000 settlement. Just because someone said, "I'm sorry, I can't do that. It goes against my Christian beliefs." Now, the court did reverse one decision that said bakers Aaron and Melissa Klein violated state law by communicating their intent to discriminate against gay couples in the future, according to some news outlet. The case could next go to the Oregon Supreme Court, and it should go to the Supreme Court of the United States, I believe, because we need to determine whether freedom of religion is true in this country or whether it's just a fabrication. We need to determine whether freedom of religion is indeed applicable or whether we are free to practice our religion as long as it doesn't offend pederasts, perverts, pedophiles, and other such, let's call them fringe practitioners of immoral deeds. Because as long as someone can take me to court and actually win because my Christian belief does not allow me to put my hand in with their sin and validate their perversion by participating in something that I know is against my beliefs to participate in, then there really is no freedom of religion. It's just an illusion. And if it's just an illusion, this thing is being kept together by bubble gum and scotch tape, kids, and eventually it's going to burst at the seams. Eventually something's going to give. And this is why so many on the other side rage. They can't even form complete sentences anymore. They just scream and holler and want violence and death because they were so close to achieving what they dreamed of achieving for so long. And the rug got snatched out from under them. And what they never thought in a million years could happen happened in one night right before their eyes. See, this is why I don't believe and have never believed that there was any such thing as the Russian collusion. Look, these people didn't give Donald Trump a chance in a million. They thought he was a farce. They thought he was a joke. They laughed and laughed until he became the nominee and laughed some more because they thought Pantsuit Barbie was going to wipe the floor with them. And you can see, this is the amazing thing about the age and era we live in. You can actually go back and click through some news reports. Everything's on film. Everything's recorded. Everything is somewhere, whether on YouTube or on CNN or on Fox. You're going to find it if you look. And you can see the other, just the utter mockery and disdain that these people had whenever anyone said, "Well, yeah, I think, you know, Trump might have a chance." They thought you were from another planet. And yet their worst nightmare came to pass. And what they're realizing slowly but surely is that the idea that this man was just a closet Democrat and that he was pretty much going to govern the way Hillary would have is dying on the vine for them. He's going against everything they hold dear and love. And he's chipping away at the old administration's let's call it foolishness. And see, for a little while, they comforted themselves with the idea that, well, you know, fine, he won, but he's not going to do much. Until he started making some bold moves, such as, you know, moving that embassy to Jerusalem, like we talked about. And tonight, saw another news piece saying that Israel has reached a deal with the United States to implement Donald Trump's Iran policy. Now, if you don't know about what took place back in 2015 and 16 with Iran, they pretty much wiped the floor with us. Supposedly, we made a peace agreement, but it was not. We made a pact, which wasn't. And Obama was so bent on having this be his legacy signature piece that he made some very disturbing compromises with the likes of Hamas and other terrorist organizations just to placate the Iranians. Now, I think this is just the beginning of this whole thing exploding. And if what I'm hearing turns out to be true, then there will be criminal proceedings against some in the Obama administration, because this is nothing less than giving aid and comfort to the enemy. When you willingly and willfully placate terrorists, because otherwise Iran's going to walk away from the deal or walk away from the bargaining table, as it were, then I'm sorry, you need to be prosecuted. That's breaking the law. That's perhaps even high treason and misdemeanors. Who knows? But the United States and Israel have reached an agreement to implement President Donald Trump's policy to counter the threat posed by Iran, including its nuclear ambitions, its regional expansion, and its role in international terror. Now, Israel does have a vested interest in all this, and I don't think they're going to be shy about talking about it, because Iran, once it gets the bomb, the first thing they're going to want to do is target Israel. They've not shied away from their intent. And we've talked about this often enough. If someone keeps telling you they're going to stab you, they're going to kill you, they're going to end you, well, you kind of have to start believing them at their word. You'd be a fool to ignore someone threatening your life repeatedly and even taking steps to fulfill their threats, to actually, you know, try to kill you. This has been happening with Israel for so many years. Israel is not taking Iran's threats lightly. And thankfully, neither is the Trump administration. Look, we you know, Israel may be little Satan, but we're the great Satan to them. And so whatever treaty we might have with Iran is only good insofar as it benefits Iran. Once they no longer believe that the treaty is beneficial to them, they will simply no longer honor it. See, in order for an armistice or a treaty to work, you must have two people or two entities that are equally honorable. Iran is not. The Quran gives you permission to deceive your adversary. It gives you permission to be dishonest if your intent is to destroy your enemy. So this is, I guess, in large part, the policy that is being implemented to counter the threat posed by Iran. Barak Ravid of Israel's Channel 10, writing at Axios on Thursday, reported that the U.S. and Israel met secretly at the White House on December 12th the day the American media was focused on the Alabama special election. Good time to meet. In a joint document based on President Trump's speech on Iran in October, the two delegations represented by their respective national security advisors, including H.R. McMaster for the American side, outlined shared goals. And I wanted to read this because, again, had the other side won, this would not be implemented. Had the other side won, this would not be happening. One, covert and diplomatic action to block Iran's path to nuclear weapons. According to the U.S. official, this working group will deal with diplomatic steps that can be taken as part of the Iran nuclear deal to further monitor and verify that Iran is not violating the deal. It's, you know what, it's almost a guarantee that they are. And everybody knows it. Unless the deal doesn't say you're not going to try to proliferate nuclear weapons, they're violating it. It also includes diplomatic steps outside of the nuclear deal to put more pressure on Iran. The working group will deal with possible covert steps against the Iranian nuclear program. Now, countering Iranian activity in the region, especially the Iranian entrenchment efforts in Syria and the Iranian support for Hezbollah and other terror groups. This working group will also deal with drafting U.S.-Israeli policy regarding the day after in the Syrian civil war. The third thing they will be focusing on is countering Iranian ballistic missile development and the Iranian Precision Project, aimed at manufacturing precision-guided missiles in Syria and Lebanon for Hezbollah. Hezbollah, terrorist organization who got a nice infusion of money when we decided to give Iran, how many billions was it in cash? Just so they'd sign on the dotted line so the previous administration could say, we brokered peace. We brokered no peace. We gave Iran a bunch of money. They're giving Hezbollah money and precision-guided missiles. Who do you think they're going to use them against? Come on. You get one guess, and you're going to be right. Israel. Because the state of Israel is surrounded by enemies on all sides. It's God that is keeping this nation. And I know that I got the emails. I can forward them to whoever wants. I've been called a Zionist now. You're defending Israel a little too much. You're a Zionist. You must be a Zionist. Look, I'm a Bibleist. We discussed this previous program. I need go no further than I will bless those who bless you and curse those who curse you. Pretty cut and dry. Declarative statement from Almighty God. So, yeah. Call me a Zionist. I'm still going to speak the truth. I'm still going to tell you what I know to be in line with Scripture. So, have a good day. The fourth thing that they will be focusing on is a joint U.S.-Israeli preparation for different escalation scenarios in the region. That means preparations for war. So, we conflate different things. And when we conflate different things, they become monsters in and of themselves. Do I believe that war is imminent? Yes. Do I believe that we will be part of it in some way? Yes. Do I believe that North Korea is the biggest enemy we have? No. And these are all things that we have to keep an eye on, and these are all things that we have to be aware of in this coming year, because, again, I understand some people's position that say it's a horrible thing that this administration won because it put Christians to sleep. That's a cop-out. I'm sorry. If you're asleep, that's your fault. Your wakefulness or lack thereof should not be dependent on who's president. Your wakefulness or lack thereof should not be dependent on which political party is in power. You're supposed to be awake. You're supposed to be watchful. You're supposed to understand the times and the seasons that you're living in and live accordingly. The idea that, well, you know, just because Trump won, Christians went to sleep. No, come on. Let's be honest. Let's be intellectually honest about this. Because those same Christians would have gone back to sleep had Hillary won. Those same Christians would have gone back to sleep had, I don't know, Barney the dinosaur won. They don't care. They like being asleep. Wakefulness is painful for them. Because if they had to wake up, if wakefulness was something that they experienced for longer than a breath, then they would have to contend with the reality that they're not living the lives that God expects them to live. This is the truth. This is why people prefer slumber. This is why people despise those that try to wake them. Because they know in their heart of hearts that wakefulness will compel them to transform, to change, to be more than what they are, thereby being less than what their flesh wants them to be. See, because there's always a give and take. If there's more godliness in your life, then there's less worldliness in your life. If there's more righteousness in your life, then there's less sinfulness in your life. There's always that balance, counterbalance, and a lot of people would rather remain asleep because they want more of the world in them than they want of God. They want more sin than they want righteousness. They want more worldliness than they want holiness. This is the reality of it. This is the truth of it. Because if they truly desired a righteous walk with God, if they truly desired holiness, then they would be awake irregardless of who was in the White House, irregardless of what political party won. So let's not be intellectually dishonest and say that, well, this is bad for Christians because they went back to sleep. No, come on. If anybody went to sleep because somebody won the presidency, it's because they wanted to go to sleep. It's because the idea of wakefulness did not appeal to them enough for them to exert themselves into wakefulness. How about that? So what's the other reasoning? What's the other reason that it's a bad thing that this administration's in power and that we have taken the embassy back to Jerusalem and we have now apparently started working together with Israel to combat the influence of Iran in the Middle East region? Because Iran has big hopes and big plans. And they extend to pretty much all of the Middle East. And their plans do not include something called the State of Israel. This is the reality of it. And so we had an entire 8 years where an administration of these United States was working diligently to aid perhaps Israel's greatest enemy. And at the same time, meddle in their elections repeatedly. Remember, speaking of election meddling, children, remember what we did to the elections in Israel where we actually paid serious money. By we, I mean the Obama administration paid serious money trying to get Bibi Netanyahu out of office. It didn't work. Let's not be hypocrites and talk about, oh, they're meddling in our elections. How dare they? Because we do the same exact thing to other nations as well. Now, meddling and collusion, two very different things. The investigation's been going on for what? Almost a year now. And if the best you got, after almost a year of investigation, is Manafort not paying enough taxes back in 2010 or 2012? If that's the best you can come up with, then perhaps there's nothing there. Then perhaps the whole Russia thing was a giant smokescreen. Perhaps it was even a projection, blaming the other side for something you yourself did. Because with each passing day, new things are coming to the fore, and they're not looking very good for the Democratic Party, for the Clinton machine, or for some very high up Obama appointees. So this is where we are. And in a handful of days, we will be in the year 2018. And oddly enough, I think that the self-same issues and the same self-same problems and the self-same narratives are going to plague us in 2018 that plagued us in 2017. Because they don't know what else to do with themselves. They've got nothing left in their playbook. Contrary to what everyone believed and contrary to what they were telling everyone, this administration is actually succeeding. It's actually making headway. It's actually doing some good and positive things. Perfect? Not by a long shot. Better than the alternative? By miles and miles, kids, by miles and miles. So, what else happened? I saw a story. It was funny. I know some people are going to take it the wrong way. But it is what it is. What can I say? It seems that one of our beloved elected officials felt entitled, let's put it that way, to taking the first class seat of a lady who had paid for her seat, and that lady was none the happier. And of course, because it was Madam Jackson Lee, the first thing her mind went through, the first thing that she accused this woman of, was racism. Because how are you not racist when you complain about having paid for an airplane seat and then being told you can no longer sit in the seat you paid for because, you know, a U.S. representative wants your seat really bad, even though she hadn't reserved it. So, remember we were talking about these people believing that they are our betters, that they are our masters, and that we are just the faceless taxpaying serfs that keep their gravy trains rolling along. Yep, Madam Jackson Lee kind of proved that one, didn't she? Because most politicians today, even in America, are not really servants of the people. And this is one of those things that I had to come to terms with, because I grew up in a nation that was not of the people or for the people or by the people. It was a communist dictatorship where you were told what to do, where to work, where to live. And in exchange, you got a little flour and a little bread and perhaps a banana once a year. And I've always believed that this country was different until you start seeing these stories leak out about elected officials acting as though they are above the law. It's happening more and more. And I don't think it's because the stories are coming out or people are willing to leak more and more. I think the percentage of those who are taking advantage once they are elected to power has grown exponentially. I think unseemly people that are disingenuous, that have no scruples, no morals, and no sense of dignity, have caught on to the idea that being an elected official is a nice way to earn a nice living and be respected in the community. And so, people like Representative Sheila Jackson Lee, who otherwise would have a difficult time being hired as a janitor at a truck stop in the middle of nowhere, is now a representative of the people. But being a representative of the people, in her mind, puts her above the people. And so when she strolls on a plane and somebody's already reserved the first class seat she wants to sit in, well, she just snaps a finger, doesn't she? And American Airlines or United Airlines or whoever it is does the dirty work for her. And when they're called out on it, because there's no reason to demand that somebody who rightfully paid for their seat be told to go to the back of the plane because you want to sit there. There's absolutely no legal reason. And when somebody calls you on it, the best you got is cry racism. Thank you, Sheila Jackson Lee, for proving to us little people that every elected official, or at least a large chunk of the elected officials, consider themselves above the people that elected them to office, above the people that pay their salaries every single month with their tax dollars. Thank you. Other than that, what else has been going on? Everybody seems to be buoyant. There's much optimism in the air. And it's inevitable that it shrink back. It's inevitable that it fades. And even though we shouldn't be, we're affected by what's going on around us, whether positively or negatively. I don't mean that we're affected in so far as it holds sway over actions, but seeing positive people all around you, it makes you smile a little bit. Seeing people actually optimistic about the future gives you a giddy sort of feeling. How long this lasts, I do not know. But I've seen a lot of happy people lately. And that you know, I know that a lot of people enjoy being morose and a lot of people don't know how to smile anymore. But smiling is good for the soul. No, that's not in the Bible. That's from Mike. I do believe that smiling is good for the soul. Because God didn't create us to be somber and miserable. God didn't create us to walk around pouting all the time. God desires his creation to feel joy. God desires his creation to be jubilant, to smile, to take pleasure in the little things. This morning I woke up, and as the sun was rising, I watched a squirrel playing in the snow for 20 minutes. I was just drinking my cup of coffee, sitting by the window, and watching a squirrel play in the snow. I don't know what it was playing with. It may have been an acorn. Couldn't tell you for certain because it wasn't that close. But there was just such a simple purity there in God's creation. It had snowed a little bit overnight, so it was just a blanket of white. And this goofy squirrel jumping around in the snow, playing as though it had not a care in the world. And it made me smile. And then my daughter woke up, and she asked me some funny thing about toast burning, and that made me smile again. And I know that some people take offense at the idea that I like smiling, because you should just be, you know, hammering nails. That's all you should be doing all day, man. Just screaming and yelling and telling people what they already know, probably. You see, because you know, come on, you know. You know what is right. You know what is wrong. You know what is sin. You know what is worldliness. You know. And because, you know, this is why some of you write me letters asking questions. Well, you know, Pastor so-and-so said it was okay to, you know, drink a little bit now and then. What do you think? It's because you know that didn't sound right that you're asking me what I think. Well, I think that your own conviction and conscience should dictate you. But I also know that the Bible says don't get drunk. So if you have a predisposition to imbibing in alcohol, better to stay away altogether than try to walk that fine line between, you know, what is sin and what isn't. Because once the enemy sees that you're playing this game, he's going to do his utmost every single day to try to trip you up and get you to fall over the edge. You know what is right. You know what is true. You know what you ought to be doing and what you aren't. And I realize that a lot of people love the idea of New Year's resolutions. I don't, because I don't have to wait for a new year to do what's right. You don't have to wait for the new year to do what's right. You know what's right. Do it today. Why wait another 3-4 days? Who knows what can happen in those 3-4 days? So knowing that you know what's right, the question you have to ask yourself is, what is keeping you from doing what is right? It's not me smiling or me telling you that I smiled twice today. I guarantee you that's not keeping you from doing what's right. It's not me saying Merry Christmas. That's not keeping you from doing what's right either. So this is a question that you have to answer for yourself, and you have to be honest with yourself about it. You can't go around blaming the fact that Donald Trump's president on you being lukewarm or on you being asleep. Those sort of cop-outs only work in the mirror. They won't work when you stand before God, because if we are truly honest with ourselves, we know that we will have no excuse or justification for not doing what we know we ought to be doing all along. Now, sure, we can try to muster up a defense. Sure, we can try to point to this person or that person and say, well, They made me do it, but they didn't, and you know they didn't. Not even the devil made you do it. The devil offered you an opportunity, and you took it. See, the devil tempts. He can't force. That's the delineation here. And that's something we need to understand. This is as far as the devil can go. He can tempt. He can insinuate. He can suggest. But he can't force you to sin. You choose to do it. This is the harsh reality. This is the truth that many a pastor won't tell you because it opens up an entire can of worms. But truth is truth. The devil cannot force you to sin. He can tempt you. He can suggest it to you. He can bring into your path those things that he knows would most likely make you stumble. But he can't force you to sin. This is why the Word of God tells us to resist the devil, and he will flee. When he spreads out his wares upon the table and you turn around and walk away, there's nothing he can do. But if you start taking a closer look, if you start picking up this trinket or that trinket and go, hey, this looks interesting, then he knows he may have a customer. And so he begins the bargaining process. I'll make you a good deal. Almost free. It'll feel so good. You deserve it. It's the new year. No one will know. And all the tired, cliched lines that the devil pulls out of his bag of tricks over and over again. As long as you stand before that table and start looking at the trinkets and don't just walk away. Nothing that the enemy has to offer is worth displeasing God. I can't put it any more succinctly. Nothing that the enemy has to offer you is worth displeasing God. And you know yourself, and you know your weaknesses, and you know your pressure points. And because you know these things, you ought to also know when it's the enemy trying to use them. When it's the enemy trying to feed your ego, trying to feed your pride, trying to feed your lust, trying to be that which you know will make you stumble. And that's when you have to not just pump the brakes, man, but pull the handbrake and back away. Because if you flirt with it, if you give it time, if you try to get really, really close to the fire only to feel it singe your hair but not really burn your skin, eventually it will get you. I don't know who this is for, and I don't know how we ended up here, because we were talking about wedding cakes for homosexual weddings and how the U.S. and Israel are going to combat Iran. But this is what happens on this program more often than not. I go off on a tangent that I have no clue who it's for, but it's for somebody. Look, you can only flirt with sin for so long before you fall into its snare. Flee the appearance of evil. Not just evil itself, but it just an inkling, just an idea. Something here doesn't feel right. Walk away. Better to disavow yourself of a potential friendship, if you will, than to fall into the snare of the enemy. Because more often than not, that first impression, that gut feeling, that alarm bell that rings in your head and you go, something's off here, more often than not, it's 100% right. Now, when I say more often than not, I'm saying like 98% of the time. Sometimes may just be heartburn, one too many bean burritos. But most of the time, if you know how to listen for that alarm bell, you can flee the appearance of evil every single time. And it may not be evil on the surface, because the appearance of it isn't evil itself. Sometimes it masquerades and camouflages itself. But that Spirit of God within you knows the depth of a thing. And it's the Spirit of God within you that warns you of the potential disaster awaiting you if you continue to pursue that object or that thing or that person. And it's only when we avoid that alarm bell, it's only when you avoid the warning signs, that you fall headfirst into the snare of the enemy. And once again, not God's fault, not the devil's fault. Whose fault is it that you fell into the snare? Nobody's fault but your own. Now I know we can try to reverse engineer the egg and say, well, if the snare weren't there to begin with, then we would have never fallen into the snare. But it was, because we know that we have an enemy. And we know what his desire is. And so deconstructing or reverse engineering the egg isn't going to work this time, because we ought to have known that we have an adversary. And so we ought to have been wary of our adversary's plans and snares and traps and devices all along. If I know I have an enemy and his desire is to destroy me, I'm going to be vigilant. I'm going to look around. I'm going to have situational awareness every single minute of every single day, anticipating an attack, anticipating a snare, anticipating a trap. Not walking about as though I was invincible, not walking about as though I was untouchable. Not walking about as though I didn't have a care in the world. Because I know I have an enemy. And I know that he's seeking to destroy me. And so what do I do? I am weary. My senses are in hyperdrive. Everywhere I look, I look for the enemy's plot and plan. And if something appears to be off, if something appears to be not quite right, rather than go closer to investigate, to confirm, or otherwise, you know, not confirm that it's the plot of the enemy, I just walk away. Why put myself in a situation when I don't have to? Because when I stand before Almighty God, you're not going to answer for my missteps, and I won't answer for yours. I'm not going to answer for your shortcomings, and you're not going to answer for mine. We will all be held accountable and responsible for that which we did, and also that which we did not do. And so it's wise to use wisdom in all things. And though I said I do not believe in New Year's resolutions, perhaps this coming year, knowing that the time is getting closer, knowing how close we are to the end of all things, knowing that the enemy knows his days are numbered. Could we perhaps, perchance, be a little more wary and a little less laissez-faire about our adversary? Just a thought. Well, it seems that another hour has come and gone, surprisingly. I guess I won't be seeing you until the new year. And so, Happy New Year, 2018. Who'd have thunk it? Wasn't it supposed to be 88 and then 89? Imagine that. Here we are, 2018. And God, in his mercy, still tarries. May God bless you. Thank you for your prayers. Thank you for your kind wishes for our new baby. May God keep you in all things. And until next time, be wise. Gino, it's all yours.
Amen. We want to wish everyone a happy and blessed new year. We want to let you know that we do pray for you. We pray for the people that send in a prayer request. Also, we want to remind you that if you have any questions for Mike, send them to lightoftruth@handofhelp.com. Consider even a simple question trivial, because they're not trivial. You can also get our radio show on YouTube, and every one that we have done is on the YouTube channel. Go to Google, type in YouTube, and go to that video site, and then just simply type in Light of Truth, and you will go to the archive programs. You can also check out the Light of Truth on blogtalkradio.com, as they have all the broadcasts archived as well. We again pray for God's richest blessing in your life and strength in 2018.
Thank you for listening to today's broadcast, The Light of Truth with Michael Boldea. If you would like to order a copy of today's broadcast, please visit our website at handofhelp.com. If you have questions about our ministry, you can email us at handofhelpoffice@aol.com or simply call us at 920-206-9910. God bless you. They are all